This podcast is an unedited excerpt from an MCLE program presented at MCLE's Conference Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Please note that MCLE's products, services, and communications are offered solely as an aid to developing and maintaining professional competence. The statements in this recording may not apply to your circumstances, and no legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice is being rendered by MCLE or its speakers. For full terms and conditions, please see the MCLE website.
Next up is Detective Brian Cohen. You all might remember him. He is a veteran who proudly served active duty in the U.S. Marine Corps from 1992 to 1995. He has a bachelor's in criminal justice from Curry College. He became a police officer with the city of Quincy in 2001. Detective Cohen has been assigned to the Quincy Police Department Drug Control Unit for almost 15 years. He has been involved in over 2,500 drug investigations, ranging from street-level drug sales to more complex long-term investigations involving larger drug trafficking organizations. Detective Cohen has participated in joint investigations involving the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Boston Police Drug Control Unit, Norfolk County District Attorney's Drug Task Force, and other local law enforcement agencies. Detective Cohen has testified as an expert witness concerning street-level drug sales for the Commonwealth and Norfolk Superior Court on numerous occasions. Detective Cohen regularly gives presentations on drug use and abuse to students and the citizens of Quincy, and for us at MCLE. So thank you so much, Detective Cohen. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Wish I could see everybody in person. This is somewhat new, I guess we're all used to. Hopefully next year we can all get together and we can meet each other live and in person, and we can see drugs firsthand. So my presentation, much like in years past, is going to talk about drugs, what my partners and I are seeing on the streets of Quincy, greater Boston area. So my presentation is a lot of pictures. We'll talk about the main drugs that we're coming across, and I'm free for questions as we go. So type them in and Linda can cut in and ask me questions at any time, and hopefully I'll have the answer for you. So starting off, thank you for the introduction, Linda, and it's good to see everybody online at least. So coming up on 20 years as a police officer, and I'm about 15 and a half years in the drug control unit. So my partners and I were responsible for investigating drug crimes as well as others in and around the city of Quincy, but we're also on a drug task force, the South Shore Drug Task Force, and as Linda mentioned, we work with other agencies on multi-jurisdictional investigations. So going forward, we're going to go ahead and talk about some drugs. There's my contact information, should anybody want to reach out. It's my office line, as well as my email address. Feel free to give me a call. I'll put that up at the end of my presentation. I have a lot of slides here, just pictures, which we'll talk about. So I will go through them relatively fast, and I can certainly go back to one if somebody wants to look at it, if I'm asked. So guns, drugs, and money. There's a big seizure that we had this year. That's primarily what we're investigating, or my unit's responsible for investigating, oftentimes in street-level drug sales and even larger sales where there are drugs, there's money, as well as weapons to protect the stash. So you'll see a few of those pictures throughout this presentation. So drugs of abuse, what are we commonly coming across and what do we see users using? So we have different types of drugs. There's narcotics, right? That's your painkillers. That's going to be your opiates or your synthetic opiates like fentanyl, which is our biggest problem right now, and it has been for years. But with that being said, we're seeing other stimulants like cocaine. Cocaine's certainly been steady seizures for us usage, but we definitely have seen an uptick in methamphetamines. That's been big time within the last couple of years, at least in the city of Quincy, and we'll show you some pictures of what we're dealing with. Hallucinogens, benzodiazepines, synthetic cathinones, which we're going to be your bath salts, or things that are trying, or substances that are trying to mimic MDMA, or better known as Molly, synthetic cannabinoids. We do see that. So that's your basically your fake marijuana. It's a chemical agent that's sprayed on some type of plant material to be smoked. Extremely dangerous. And marijuana, we see hash and we see marijuana in different forms. So we'll talk about marijuana. Certainly it's legal up to an ounce to possess, but we seize a lot of marijuana. We are involved in large scale investigations with bulk marijuana, and when there's bulk marijuana, there's obviously a lot of money to be seized. So when I first became a police officer and detective in the drug control unit, our biggest problem were opiates, and it would start with OxyContin. So OxyContin is a brand name, like Tylenol is a brand name, but the drug is acetaminophen. OxyContin, the drug is oxycodone. So it's a time-release drug. Oftentimes they call it oxycodone ER, extended release. And as you can see from this this picture, there's a green coating on it. It's marked OC. Commonly what abusers would do is scrape off that coating or maybe suck it off, put it in their mouth and remove the coating for a while. Then they would remove it from their mouth and grind it into powder form. Once it's in powder form, it can then be nasally ingested, injected, or smoked, where you're getting that drug rush through the blood-brain barrier, and certainly the high sets in a lot faster. So this was big time years ago, but Purdue Pharma did a good job. There's an Oxy 80. And I should say, too, still today, oxycodone sells for $1 a milligram on the street. So this pill here that you see would be $80, certainly a lot of money. And as people use more, their tolerance increases. Now they have to purchase more, not only to get high, but to prevent being sick, right? The withdrawal symptoms. So bad addiction, and it certainly leads to other drug use like heroin and or fentanyl nowadays. So these are the old tablets. They were marked OC, OxyContin, 80 milligrams. Purdue Pharma, who manufactures the tablet, did a good job, and they basically came out with a new formulation, which made it harder to grind into powder form. It has a spongy consistency with these tablets, and it's very difficult. I won't mention how some people make it into powder, but it is very difficult to turn this tablet into powder form. So less risk of overdose, less likely to abuse this by snorting or injection. However, the pills can still be orally ingested and abused that way. But when this happened, when Purdue Pharma did this to the tablet, these almost vanished overnight for us. Yeah, we see them every now and then, but we don't see them as much. And the reason being is we have generic oxycodone 30 milligram pills that are on the street, and they're abundant. There's no coating to these pills. They're generic tablets. There's all different types of markings. People will call them Perk 30s on the street or blueberries. So it's 30 milligram tablets. So each one of those tablets costs $1 a milligram, so $30 a piece. And these pills are easily crushed into powder form. And again, the user can nasally ingest, inject, or smoke them. So we see a lot of these still highly abused. Great drug for pain medication if you're prescribed it by a doctor and you're taking it responsibly. But they are very addictive, and they are consistently abused with the people that we're meeting on a day-to-day basis. Other narcotics that of a concern for us that we find people abusing on the regular, you have Vicodin or hydrocodone. That would be hydrocodone with acetaminophen, methadone, and morphine, commonly abused. With oxycodone abuse, or now somebody's addicted to these pills, and now their pill habit is now not one pill a day, but maybe five. And in the case of using oxycodone 30s, now your habit's $150 a day if you can't get a prescription for it. So if you can't afford that, The cheapest way to go would be go to heroin. But I got to tell you, at least in the city of Quincy and the surrounding communities, we're not seeing a lot of heroin. Fentanyl has definitely took over. Yes, we still see it, but not as much. Whereas go back 5 years ago, we were seeing it every day. But heroin is still out there. It can be in various states. You can find it as a white powder. Oftentimes we see it as a brown or a tan powder. But then you can have on the far right there some black tar heroin. Don't see it much in the Northeast, although we've had a few seizures of black tar, but very abundant out on the West Coast. There's what we call a finger. That's what's referred to a finger on the streets around here anyways, which would be 10 grams of heroin. There's half fingers, and then on the far right, you have a quarter finger of heroin. This is how it can be sold. You have individual bags. Here you can see this is a hide key or a magnetic hide that can be that we seize from the bottom of the vehicle. You can see there's some like brown particles on there. Those are actually coffee grains that were designed to throw our drug detection canines off, which didn't happen. They're pretty good. So, here you go. You see individual bags. So the smaller bags that you see, I guess on the right side would be roughly about $50 a piece. It would be under a half gram. The ones that are in the blue balloon and also bagged up, those are more than a gram. That would be over $100. Here you can see them once we remove them from the package. So again, each one of the tan powder bags can sell for about $50 a piece. There's some more heroin. These are single dose bags of heroin, often found in glassine bags or wax bags. In certain parts of the state, you'll see that. Matter of fact, I was talking to one of my colleagues out in Springfield. They see a lot of single doses. New York City, this is how heroin is typically sold on the streets of New York City, where you have a single dose. This bag would contain anywhere from 0.5 to a tenth of a gram. That sells for about $10 a piece. There's some more individual injections, so enough for a single dose of heroin for a person. Where those other bags, like these, you might, from a typical bag of tan powder there, a user, again, depending on usage tolerance, you might be able to get, 5 to 10 doses out of that. These are some pictures of some paraphernalia that we commonly come across that is indicative of somebody who's using. You have the remnants of these corner bags. You might have a spoon where they put substance on the spoon and add a little water into it. So powder would be dropped onto that spoon. Little water would be added. And sometimes they heat it up underneath. And then they put their syringe into the liquid and draw it into the syringe before injecting it. So this would be testing positive for heroin, most likely in a spoon like this. Oftentimes we'll come across little pieces of cotton, which would be put onto the spoon and act as a filter. The needle of the syringe will go into that piece of cotton, and the drug would then be drawn up into the syringe. There you can see that needle, typical brown liquid that we come across. In the cap, bottle cap there, the plastic bottle cap, there is a little piece of saturated cotton in there along with some other suspected heroin residue. On the tin foil, that's commonly what we find when people are smoking it. They'll put the drug onto tin foil and provide a heat source underneath it to ingest it. Again, you flip a can over, there's some residue there. Users will use different containers to prepare their drugs for use. I just took a picture of this today. Just wanted to give you an idea of what we see. Not so much a Ziploc bag, but let's take any plastic sandwich bag, which is commonly used to package drugs. You can package it in plastic sandwich bags. The corners of those bags, those glassine bags, as I mentioned, sometimes Ziploc bags, but typically the heroin, fentanyl, and cocaine that we see in the area The drugs are packaged in plastic corner bags. And what the dealers will do is they'll put the drug into the corner and then twist the bag, that corner of that bag, and then cut it. And then you end up with the corners of packaged drugs. Obviously, there's no drugs in these corners right now, but that's what you would see. So we would see the corners with typical people are using. Now, that other bag, the Ziploc bag, the remnants of it, we have a slang term that we call that a diaper bag, right? You get the idea that, you know, if you put a doll in there, they could stick their legs through the corners. So we call them diaper bags. Often we don't see people who are using drugs possessing diaper bags. You can see people who are dealing drugs might have those bags left over. There's some more corner bags that we come across. Again, these are typical of people who are using. Here we have a field test that we use, and I'll talk a little bit more about this towards the end of my presentation, but this is a presumptive field test. It's a Raman spectrometer. It's called the TruNoc Raman spectrometer, and here the laser can go through both the evidence bag and the package bag of drugs and detect it for us in some cases. We can't always detect it in this manner, but here we were able to identify heroin within that bag. Again, here's some other things that are typical of somebody using. You have a syringe. You can see pieces of cotton on the far left in the one with basketballs on it. And then you have your typical tan powder, which would be your heroin. Now, to show you some pictures of, this is from a search warrant that we conducted, and just some drugs that were seized from this Mentos plastic gum container. You have multiple drugs packaged. You have some white powder there that ended up being actually cocaine. There's some, these tested positive for methamphetamine. And then some other things that would be indicative of somebody who's dealing drugs. You have your plastic sandwich bags on hand. You got a digital scale in there. You're going to weigh your drugs before you package them prepare them for distribution. Inositol, there's some cutting agents. There's many different types of cutting agents. Dealers will use to cut their drugs with. Obviously, the more cut they use, their profits will increase. So commonly we'll see inositol with cocaine, but there can be other cutting agents like mannitol, benzocaine, lactose, all different types of dietary supplements that can be used as a cutting agent. So we talked about oxycodone and heroin. And now we have fentanyl, which definitely came on the scene more than 5 years ago and seems to dominate the streets of Quincy anyway. So some legal fentanyl or prescribed fentanyl would be these transdermal patches where this gets placed on the skin and people slowly get the fentanyl released for a painkiller. This is legal. This is prescribed. However, they are sold. We don't see much of it anymore because we see a lot of clandestinely made fentanyl on the street. But people who would abuse this, certainly you could sell them, but often we hear people and have come across people who actually put this patch in a freezer and then cut it into small squares and distribute it that way. And people can then orally ingest it or keep it in their mouth so they get that fentanyl release. Although the fentanyl that you'll see that is prescribed is lozenges, where people can get the small dosage, as you can see, or maybe even a little larger dosage, where people can use that should they be prescribed it if they have chronic pain. But we don't come across it that way. Often we come across this, again, clandestinely made fentanyl, where it comes across as a white powder. Sometimes it can be a tan powder where they make it look like heroin. And here, again, we have a field test with the TruNoc that shows we tested this substance as fentanyl. Now, this is some slides I wanted to show you, or these are some slides, to give you an idea, a rough idea. From region to region, these prices change. And the price can change based on supply. I don't say demand because there's usually a demand for it. So this just gives you a typical idea of what size, somebody who's using may purchase. All right. So this is roughly about 0.35 of a gram. that can sell for $50, $40, $50, give or take. So again, these prices can change. This is not hard facts, but just to give you an idea of what the prices we typically see and the quantities that we're coming across. So here we have about a 3.5 gram bag of fentanyl. Here we got 10 grams, shows you the price of a finger and the potential profit. And I put 700 plus because, again, fentanyl is very potent, and we'll talk more about that. But it doesn't take a lot of fentanyl to, one, get somebody high or kill them. So a lot of cutting agents added to it. So you can double the cutting agents and double your profits. So here we are. We got 18 grams of heroin, roughly $1,400. That's trafficking as far as the mass laws go. Potential profit, $1,200. Trafficking for fentanyl is 10 grams or more. And carfentanyl, any amount of carfentanyl, since it's so lethal, it's 10,000 times more potent than morphine and 100 times more potent than fentanyl, is a trafficking charge. And I'm happy to say that we haven't come across it here in Quincy. We have intel. I know down in Providence, Rhode Island, they had some fake oxycodone 30 milligram tablets that tested positive for carfentanyl. And there was one seizure, I believe, in Quincy by the transit police who seized carfentanyl, which the lab verified. But we haven't, my partners and I, we haven't seen it, which is a good thing. It's very dangerous. 1 ounce heroin of fentanyl, they're roughly about the same price. 2,500, you can see the potential profit. Again, 100 grams, and again, you can see the size relative to the quarter I put up there. Kilo, not the best picture. Kilo is 2.2 pounds of it. Kilo of heroin and fentanyl can sell for $62,000 wholesale price within the greater Boston area. And the profits can be astronomical. This is the picture of a vehicle where we had a makeshift hide, as we call it. We removed that plastic, rubber plastic from the cup holder. And there you get some fentanyl in there, hidden inside there. Here's another field test that we use. This is actually a high-pressure mass spectrometer. This identified fentanyl for us. And I'll talk about that towards the end of our presentation. Here's some oxycodone 30 milligram looking tablets that tested positive for a fentanyl analog, furanyl fentanyl, as you can see from the TruNarc. And this was verified from the lab, which would be extremely dangerous. The fact that the TruNarc can hit on these tablets directly tells me that the purity levels of those tablets are extremely high, therefore making the likelihood of overdose much higher, or death, overdose and or death. Here's an oxycodone 30 milligram tablet. And again, we identified these tablets by, or disguised as such, we identified them by their pill markings. Here we have it's a small blue pill, round blue pill. It has M on one side, the other side is 30. If you look at drugs.com or a pill identifier or a drug book or drug Bible, you'll be able to see pictures of these tablets and identify them or what they're supposed to be by these pictures. And again, here we have, this is supposed to be an oxycodone 30 milligram tablet. We used the TruNarc to identify it, and the TruNarc told us alarmed for acetaminophen. That's really good information for us because this is not a Percocet tablet. A Percocet would be acetaminophen with oxycodone. Looking at the pill Bible and knowing what's supposed to be in these pills themselves, we know that there's not supposed to be any acetaminophen in here. So this was good information where we believe acetaminophen is being used as a cutting agent, and later testing confirmed that this tablet was in fact fentanyl with acetaminophen. So these presumptive field tests are good for us not only identification, but also to establish probable cause. So again, later testing confirmed this tablet was fentanyl. These are some things that are becoming more and more abundant. This is a pill press. This was seized in Quincy, and this is about a $30,000 pill press. And you can see that there's a lot of blue powder on there. And that ended up testing positive for fentanyl. So we have a hazmat situation here, which we did call in the DEA Clan Lab team to help us mitigate this. But this is what we're coming across, and our colleagues in law enforcement are coming across more and more. People are pressing pills disguised as oxycodone, but they're actually fentanyl. And takes a very small amount of fentanyl, again, to get somebody high and or kill them. Within one tablet, there should be micrograms or less. A microgram, if you want to think about a microgram, think about 10 grains of salt. So you want to have micrograms mixed with some kind of cutting agent, lactose. You have a pill binder, obviously a blue dye, and you press these pills into pills that are disguised as oxycodone. They can then be sold on the street for $30 a piece. So the profit margin is extremely high. And not to change anybody's profession, I hope I don't, but I don't know of any better return on investment than selling fentanyl in this method. And the profits are through the roof, and this is why we're seeing more and more of these pill presses popping up. So here you can see the area, if I move my cursor here. This is where the area of the pill would be pressed. And here you have a punch die that would press the pill and put a marking on it. So here we have multiple punch dies pressing multiple pills per hour. And there's the punch dies. So here you can see this one says M in 30, not the greatest picture. But if you now have a small blue pill that's marked M30, that is disguised as an oxycodone 30 milligram tablet. And as you can see, we have people in level A, or actually more than that, mitigating this, where we had to decon this and dispose of it safely. These are some lethal doses of pure drugs. So you have pure heroin on the left, that's enough to kill somebody. Then you have the fentanyl, you can see just small grains, and then you can see carfentanil. One little grain there that could kill somebody if it was pure. Other synthetics that we come across, U47700. This is another man-made narcotic, 7.5 times more potent than morphine. So this is sometimes mixed in with other drugs. Can look like a sugar. Can look like white powder. We have another synthetic. Narcotic W18, 100 times more potent than fentanyl, extremely dangerous. Different agencies around the country are coming across this and seizing these items. Here's some stuff. We don't see it too often. There has been a few cases in the greater Boston area where they have this stuff called gray death. And this can include heroin, fentanyl, carfentanil, and U47700. And I really don't know how anybody could survive taking that. But it's out there. Narcan, thank God we have it. Quincy Police, we were the first police department in the country to basically train every one of its officers to administer. So not difficult to administer, but we started doing that years ago. And, you know, luckily we have a lot of opiate reversals. And I actually have a sheet right here as of today, since October of, believe it's 2010, we've had 1,936 overdoses in Quincy, and we've been able to reverse 1,126 of those overdoses. And obviously those numbers are a lot higher. These are just Quincy police numbers. These don't include people that where the police haven't been called and they've been taken to the hospital. So we're proud of that. This is actually the Narcan that we use that you can see on the screen right now. There's no putting it together like we had to do with this, the first Narcan that we used to use. Those were 2 milligrams each. There would be 2 vials within that packet. Now we have four milligrams, and that can be basically sprayed into somebody's nostrils. So definitely saves lives. glad to have it. So some other drugs of abuse that we come across are buprenorphine, right? Buprenorphine, naloxone. So great drug prescribed for people who are trying to kick their opiate habit. So this is obviously the safer alternative, but highly abused. These still sell on the street for $10 a pill or $10 a sublingual strip, where we commonly see it that way. Matter of fact, we had a seizure this week, hundreds of them, just on a street deal. So it's highly abused. Again, $10 on the street, but talking to some of the deputy sheriffs who work at Norfolk County, they tell us that if it's able to get smuggled into a jail, one strip can sell for up to $200 a piece. And again, talking to other law enforcement agencies around the country and other jails and prisons, similar prices. So highly abused, great to get somebody off of opiates if taken responsibly, but certainly highly abused. There's some other pictures of some of the buprenorphine or Suboxone, generic versions of Suboxone that we can come across. More drugs and money, drugs, guns, and money. Again, this somewhat goes hands in hands, at least in my business. So we see this a lot. You can see, digital scales there. We have different types of drugs. Drug deals aren't just, one-stop shopping. They are one-stop shopping. You can often get all different types of drugs from drug dealers. So it's not just, hey, where's my cocaine dealer or where's my fentanyl dealer? They often go hand in hand. And unfortunately, we've heard many reports of people who think they're buying cocaine, but they accidentally get fentanyl, and because they both are white powder often, and unfortunately they've died. So very dangerous. Fentanyl is a very dangerous drug, as are all of them, but extremely dangerous. So here we got some cocaine hydrochloride, which would be your powdered cocaine, and you get your cocaine base, which is your crack cocaine. Different street deals that we've intercepted. And talking about cocaine, this is basically very consistent in price for the most part. Sometimes it can go up depending on supply, but a half gram, at least for 20 years being a police officer, almost 20, half gram's always been $50, and a gram's always been $100. We got an 8-ball, $240. That can go up too, depending on what area you're in, what jurisdiction. Different potential profits. Again, these profits can be, I put plus because depending on the street dealer or dealer, they can double that. They might not have the greatest quality out there, but they certainly can double it. 18 grams, that would be trafficking cocaine here in Massachusetts. 1 ounce, roughly $1,500. Again, those profits can increase. 100 grams, 4,200, kilo, 35. Anywhere from 32 to 35, I believe, right now in the greater Boston area. Again, some more pictures of cocaine. Again, gram bags right there, $100 is a kilo. Again, we can use our True Knock on it. Very easy to detect cocaine with our True Knock Raman spectrometer. There's some crack. Crack's slightly more expensive than cocaine, powdered cocaine. It's a quick onset, quick high, and you have a lot of repeat customers when it comes to crack cocaine usage, more so than a powdered cocaine. Certainly, people use a lot of powdered cocaine, but crack cocaine is a fast, intense high, and the user craves more. And actually, going back to fentanyl versus heroin, fentanyl is the same. Fentanyl is, the high is longer than crack, but it is a short high. So somebody who's using fentanyl, the high is intense. The high is short-lived, talking to the informants that we regularly talk with, and substance abusers, have regular conversations with them. They say it's intense. However, it's very short-lived, maybe about an hour long. So, and they say the withdrawals are a lot worse than heroin withdrawals. So good for the drug dealer because they're craving more. They don't want to get sick. They want to go back and get more drugs. Whereas a heroin high, again, depending on usage and tolerance, it can go from anywhere from 4 to 6 hours. The high can last. So, again, fentanyl, very dangerous. Here's some paraphernalia associated with smoking crack cocaine. That's a common crack pipe we come across. People can smoke it different ways, but you usually see it in a glass pipe like this. Sometimes you'll see makeshift pipes made out of little alcohol nip bottles. This is a motor vehicle hide that we were able to locate, or their canine alerted to. And it's a mechanical hide where there was a lot of bags of cocaine inside. Some other seizures that we've had, color-coded bags of cocaine. Again, we can see it in Ziploc bags sometimes. Again, field tested positive for cocaine hydrochloride. Some things indicative of use, cut straws. People can nasally ingest these drugs with cut straws. Some kilos within a suitcase that we seized along with a lot of money. There's another screen. I guess I'm bragging a little bit for some of our good cases we've came across. So guns, drugs, and money. Again, you can bigger cases, we come across the money counters. You got digital scales, you got money folds, all different types of drugs here. We got crack cocaine in the cookie bags. We got some powdered cocaine in there. We got these round blue pills, which actually tested positive for fentanyl. They were disguised as oxycodone 30 milligram tablets. Certainly we have a firearm and some ammunition. Amphetamines. So we see a lot of amphetamines. These are highly abused. Great drug for people who have ADHD. Calms them, helps them focus, but also highly abused by people who don't suffer from ADHD. It's a stimulant, and we see a lot of people using this in the reports that we get and different trainings we've gone through. This is found often in colleges. Where students are cramming and helps them get focused and it's a speed, but it's highly addictive. So it is a speed. Again, we can field test that with our devices. Another version of it, methylphenidate, again, Ritalin, again, can be a speed. And again, these drugs are highly abused and often sold on the street. Another stimulant is methamphetamine. And as I mentioned, we come across a lot of this. We're seeing a lot more. I've seen more methamphetamine in the last 2 years working as a drug detective than I have seen in the 18 years prior. They've been telling us for years in training, it has plagued the country, except for the Northeast, except for within the last 2 years. So they've been telling us for years in training, hey, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Well, it's here. So we're seeing a lot of this. Unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of these pills that are testing positive as methamphetamine. So these are just like the amphetamine pills or that I showed you back here, amphetamines, or also known as Adderall. So they're amphetamine, but here they test positive for methamphetamine. So again, these can be sold for it's a 30 milligram tablet. These can sell anywhere from $15 to $30 a piece. Again, depending on what area you're in. So we have seen a lot of these, and I think Ms. Brooks could attest to that from the testing in the lab as well. Because when we do send the drugs to the lab, it is confirming what our presumptive field tests are telling us. See crystal meth. Oftentimes we see this in Ziploc bags. Again, more pictures of crystal methamphetamine, but methamphetamine can be crystal, it can be in tablet form, it can be in powder form. There's powder there. We don't see this too often, which is a good thing, but you go up, an hour north up into New Hampshire, parts of New Hampshire, they have subsided, but this was, go back a couple of years ago, they came across a lot of one-pot meth labs where people can actually make meth using pseudoephedrine or ephedrine and make it this way. Very dangerous, very volatile. and there's different chemical agents that needed to be added to make this. Good thing is that these have definitely dropped. The bad thing is that they dropped in seizures because there's so much meth in the region now, crystal meth that's coming this way. So people are finding they don't need to make it. The meth lab that we came across, this is an old one, as you can see, 2012. But, you know, you go into a pantry, somebody's kitchen area into the pantry, and they got canned fuel, methyl ethyl ketone, some tall signs of methamphetamine use. In that pill grinder there, that field tested positive for pseudoephedrine. There's some white powder in there. They put a bunch of pills, they grind it up, and that's the precursor needed to make methamphetamine. Again, other things that are used to make methamphetamine. Talking about more drugs that are commonly abused are some anti-anxiety, antidepressant drugs, benzodiazepines. So alprazolam, also known as Xanax, highly abused, great drug for people who again, are prescribed it and need it. But again, highly abused on the street. And we're seeing a lot of these benzos being used with opiates. So some poly drug use where they're using two or more different types of drugs. People we speak to, some of the users, they tell us it enhances the high, but it's also more likely to cause an overdose. Obviously, the more drugs you put into your system. So unfortunately, these are highly abused and they are sold on the street commonly. Also, these tablets are also disguised as alprazolam or Xanax and are actually testing positive for fentanyl as well. There's also a new designer drug that we've been coming across disguised as these Xanax bars or Xanny bars, as they call them on the street. And it's a designer drug called flualprazolam, which is obviously very dangerous. So we're seeing that. Another drug that we're coming across, and we've been seeing it, I say within the last 3 to 4 months, is a drug called xylazine, which is not scheduled yet, from my knowledge, but we're seeing more of that mixed with fentanyl. Xylazine is similar to ketamine, which is a sedative, which is, from my understanding, can be used in veterinarian settings. So fortunately, we're seeing that as well, which is only going to lead to greater potential for overdose and or death. Clonazepam, commonly sold on the street and abused. Valium or diazepam, see that a lot. Again, these are common drugs that we typically see being sold. Gabapentin or Neurontin, they're called Johnny Boys or Johnnies on the street. They sell for anywhere from $1 to $5 a pill. It's not a narcotic, but it is prescribed for many different reasons, one being nerve pain. So somebody who may have shingles might be prescribed this. Somebody who may be suffering from alcohol withdrawals or somebody who's trying to stay sober may be prescribed this. So there's different reasons doctors prescribe these drugs. But they are abused, and again, we see them commonly used with other narcotics like fentanyl, heroin, oxys. People take a lot of these as well. Other drugs that we see, they have dropped off. We do come across them occasionally. Go back, you know, about 6 years ago, we came across a lot of Molly or drugs like MDMA and other synthetic cathinones, bath salts. Methylone, methadrone, MDPV, alpha PVP, et cetera. Again, they call them bath salts on the street. MDMA can be called in powder form. It can be in crystal form, tablets or capsules. So here's some pictures of them. When they're in tablet form, they're often different colors, different markings, all different type of markings on them. You come across these, and again, we can field test them, as you can see here. With our presumptive field test. Here, this was a seizure that not too long ago where it was disguised as a Netflix tablet. So all different types of tablets that you could find. Some here that tested positive looks like rock candy. This was MDMA. Here we got a white crystal tablet. I mean, white crystal substance. That could be cocaine. That could be methamphetamine. That could be fentanyl. This was actually MDMA. Here's some synthetic cathinones. I believe this tested positive for methylone. Again, the synthetics tried to mimic the same effects as MDMA, ecstasy. Again, another one, MDPV, methylone, all different types that we can come across. Another drug that I'm happy to report we don't come across too often, but I have seen regular reports around the country from Customs Border Protection where this has been entering the country or they've had seizures of GBL. GBL will convert, it's a clear liquid. When entered into the system, it converts to GHB. So it could potentially be a date rape drug. Some bodybuilders use it, abuse it. So there are different effects of it. But again, it can be clear, it can be odorless, easily dropped in some liquids. But we did come across this not too long, you can see, in 2016. So haven't seen any since. Jason, I'm sorry, did you have a question?
We do have a question, Detective Cohen. So I guess it kind of goes to this particular question. Why did Molly get so popular and then fade away like it did? And I guess that would apply to some other things too, probably.
So I think I'll speak for the city of Quincy. We had a club, I won't mention the name, that's no longer in business, but it's an outdoor club, open during the summers. A lot of techno music, basically almost like a rave style party. And it seemed like the Molly MDMA is found in those settings where we have a lot of people dancing, techno music. Since that club's been closed, we don't see a lot of it. It's still out there. So it all depends on the area, I guess. Where you might see some more, and maybe in New York City at some rave clubs, you'll see more of it used there or around the other rave clubs around the country. So it's a, as they call it, a party drug. You know, it definitely gives people a sense of euphoria, but very dangerous, right? It will increase body temperature, increase heart rate. You know, you mix in, you know, heat and dancing, people lead to problems. So at the club that we had here in the city of Quincy, there was a lot of ambulance calls, right? A lot of medical calls where people were getting transported to the hospital for possible heart attacks, heat stroke, heat exhaustion. So this is where we saw the uptick in the Molly. But I guess it would vary from region to region. And hopefully that answered your question. Mushrooms, we do see this. We don't see it a lot, but we do see it. Psilocybin, right? Hallucinogenic mushrooms or psychedelic mushrooms. So we do come across this. This is abused. We don't see it too often, but certainly a drug of concern. You know, it can make people behave in strange ways. Not too long ago, we had a mushroom lab in somebody's house. So here in the house, there were some syringes which had mushroom spores in them, or psilocybin, hallucinogenic mushroom spores. So they needed some type of host to put it on, and this is what we found. They were in a stage of growth, but the mushroom spores weren't growing as of yet. But you know, this is dangerous. You have mold situations, you know, in addition to people who use the drugs. There's other, you know, hazardous situations whenever we come across any lab, whether it's a marijuana grow where you can have mold can certainly be a factor in somebody or detrimental to somebody's health. But, you know, meth labs, you know, fentanyl labs, that pill press that I showed you, that was a small lab that was actually found in a trailer. Somebody's trailer inside a garage. That was a small lab. Again, we had to mitigate that with our with the DEA clan lab team. So some dangerous situations with this. Other drugs that we don't see too often, this definitely had, there was an uptick in it a while ago. I think with the legalization of marijuana, in my opinion, I believe this is why we saw spice, the climb, or synthetic cannabinoids, which is your fake marijuana, right? Synthetic marijuana, fake pot, right? It's named K2, Scooby Snack Spice. It's marketed as herbal incense or potpourri. It says not for human consumption, but people smoke it. I'd advise everybody to take a look on YouTube and put in, you know, spice, smoking spice, and watch some of these videos and watch the way these people behave smoking this. Certainly a lot different than smoking marijuana or marijuana use. It's very dangerous. Definitely can lead to psychosis from the reports from the medical community. So we don't see too much of it. It's still out there. But I think with the legalization of marijuana, this, in my opinion, it has declined in seeing spice on the street. So just some examples of some stuff, some spice that we see. You can see it says at the bottom here, herbal potpourri, potpourri, Scooby Snacks. And again, people smoke this stuff. And it looks like they didn't open some of these. And again, when I'm in person, I open these containers so you can see it. It looks a lot like marijuana. It's a plant material with a chemical sprayed on it. It's basically what it is. So good thing is we don't see a lot of that, at least in our area as of right now. Marijuana. We still see marijuana being sold. This is an old picture, but I could probably show you a picture from 2 weeks ago with a lot more marijuana that we've seized. We're still seizing pounds and pounds of it, still being sold illegally, rather than people just going to the legal dispensaries and getting it. They're still moving pounds upon pounds of this stuff. We're seeing more marijuana come in via postal from the West Coast. Some of this designer marijuana, as they'll call it, is being sold. You know, here you can see these little bags have different names to them. You can see that certainly be attractive to children. You know, it looks almost like candy. And you're seeing it here, 3.5 grams. A 3.5 gram bag can sell upwards to $200. So some of this designer, as they call it, marijuana, which is basically, there's no other chemical in it besides THC. So it's just the THC levels are very high, which makes people want it. It's a big seizure that we had. 254 pounds of it, you know, street value is over $1 million. If you're breaking this all down, you know, almost $300,000 in cash. So still being sold, you know, illegally on the streets of Quincy and around the country. Again, here's some more what marijuana looks like. Again, if you were in person, you'd be able to get an idea what a legal amount to possess is, right? Approximately 1 ounce, not that big, but 1 ounce. If you're 21 or older, you can possess it legally. But again, all different ways it's being sold in ounces, half ounces, pounds, half pounds. Again, these designer packages that we're seeing coming from California. And in some cases, people are packaging it themselves. Here on this packaging material we seized from a search warrant. Again, they have medical use labels on it, medical cannabis. So we see a lot of these labels in some of our investigations. Marijuana grows, still come across them, not as much, but we do come across some marijuana grows, which again can be dangerous. Another way marijuana is, can be very dangerous is when people are converting it to oil, or as we call butane honey oil. And from there, they can make what they call wax, dabs, butter. Those are the terms that are used on the street. So it's basically extracting the THC, and it forms into basically a wax. Using some butane, in this case, you'd use a little butane, and you'd run the butane through this glass cylinder that contains leafy marijuana. You put the butane through that hole. You can see on this end, you get a screen so the plant material doesn't come out. But what's coming out is all the THC is getting extracted, or most of it, from the plant material, and it lands in a bowl. So now you have a liquid which contains THC, but also butane. So now you have to cook off the butane. And once you do, Now you have some wax, right? Or dabs, as people can make. So some more drugs, guns, and money seized by a department. Another thing we look at, you know, with, you know, people who are dealing drugs, oftentimes, you know, we have different folds. They might have different folds of money on their person. You know, here we got, you know, maybe $40 folds in some cases, maybe more. You know, those are different things that come into play. Not always. I mean, it's going to be the totality of the circumstances, as we know, everything involved. But, you know, I know when I put money in my pocket, I'm not just, you know, bundling $40, multiple folds of $40 each and put it in my pocket. But again, different things that we have come across in our investigations. So what are we looking at for time? I'm getting close. So I'll talk about some presumptive field testing that we do. Again, we still rely on Ms. Brooks and her team at the lab for confirmatory testing. But these presumptive field tests that we use are helpful to us in our investigations. One, we can identify the substance, right? 9 times out of 10, when I first started as a police officer, a white powder was cocaine. Nowadays, it can be anything. It can be cocaine. It can be fentanyl. It can be methamphetamines. It can be one of these bath salts. So having these presumptive field tests on hand are very helpful to us. So again, we can use it for identification. If we're buying the drugs with informants or as an undercover, we can field test these drugs, establish probable cause to help us obtain search warrants. We also use the presumptive field test or our testimony of such during the grand jury proceedings. So we may not have a lab cert in hand at the time, but we will, you know, get an indictment based on these presumptive field tests. And again, I can't stress enough presumptive, but again, here we have a TruNoc Raman spectrometer. We like it because we don't have to have contact with the substance itself, unlike the former testing we performed. And we still do in some cases using NIC kits or narcotic identification kits, which would be a color metric test. We still use them in some cases because the TruNoc can't detect everything, but it is helpful to us. And we like using this first because it's non-contact, right? We can go right through a bag. We certainly don't want to be exposed to fentanyl when we're field testing it. So it's a luxury to have it and to be able to field test something right through the bag or through the powder, you know, or through a bottle rather. Again, the TruNoc, it's a handheld instrument. It's more of a bulk analyzer. So anything that has 10% more of a substance, it's really easy to detect with this device. Anything below 10%, it's difficult. We have to do a secondary test where we do an extraction technique where we now do have to open up that bag and perform what we call a SIRS test. SIRS would stand for Surface Enhanced Raman Spectroscopy. It's using a vial of ethanol and a what we call a H-stick, which has a special substrate on there where the drug molecules adhere to that stick, and then we end up scanning the stick. So that can help magnify a spectrum. So this device, a lot like Ms. Brooks was telling you during their testing, again, this is presumptive. This device gives that presumptive field test, and it's basically trying to detect a spectrum or a chemical fingerprint of a substance and compare it to the known spectra within the library. So really easy to use. Again, right through plastic bags, even right through our evidence bag, we can detect some of these drugs. So here, you know, sometimes it's just as important to realize when you have a drug and when you don't, especially if we're buying it. Right. So that's important to us. So here we have cocaine hydrochloride. Now, in this particular bag, we have benzocaine. So no drugs detected with this device doesn't necessarily mean there isn't any drugs in there, because, again, this isn't a trace detection device. But, you know, here it only allows for benzocaine. So, again, non-destructive, identifies lots of drugs, provides these clear, definitive results. Has some storage, we can create reports with them. So different types of drugs, again, laser exits, hits a substance, captures a spectrum, it then compares it to the known spectra within the device. If a match is found, it displays it. So No user interpretation. It either can see it or it doesn't. Some cases we get inconclusive, so we cannot detect it. Other tests that we use, other presumptive field tests, colorimetric field tests, right? Like the NIC kit on the right or this mobile detect pouch that we can use, if again, a colorimetric test. And another device that we have, a high pressure mass spectrometer, it's called the MX908. This is for trace detection. It's very sensitive, so it can pick up certain substances for us. This not only will detect drugs, which I'm primarily using it for, but it can also detect explosives and other hazardous materials. So that is basically all I have. Actually, if how much time do I have, Jason or Linda?
Yeah, I would definitely, I mean, you have at least 15 minutes from what was planned on the agenda, I think.
I'll show everybody, thank you. I have a True Knock here just to give you an idea on how it works. And I'm not trying to sell it to you, but I want you to see it in person. We get a lot of questions about this when we speak to the grand jury. So here, again, handheld device. I'll put the laser activation code in it. The first thing I can do is perform a self-check of the device.
So I'll go ahead and do it.
Yes.
Maybe if you stop screen sharing, we could see it more closely.
Okay. So I can go ahead and perform a self-check. The self-check is going to confirm the device is working properly. Also, it can support our evidence. So here I'll go ahead and perform a self-check. And basically what I'm doing is the device is looking for, at the edge of what we call the nose cone here, it's looking for polystyrene. That is the one of the self-check standards for the science Raman spectroscopy. So here you can see the laser light is on. It's performing a self-check. I get a green screen. It says self-check passed. It's time and date stamped. So once I'm done with the self-check, it tells me that, yes, this device is working properly. There's no trace residue on the edge of this nose cone from a previous test. So I'm going to go ahead and hit the OK button. And now I'm ready to go ahead and field test my unknown substance. So here you can see I have a bag of white powder. It's in an evidence bag. It's a corner bag of white powder. I'm going to go ahead and put that right up against the nose cone. And this time I'm going to hit the scan button. I'm going to select direct scan, and I'm going to hit the scan button again. So you'll be able to see that laser light indicator come on. And basically what it's doing right now, it's capturing a spectrum of this white powder substance through not only the evidence bag, but also the packaging the drugs are packaged in. So a scan can take anywhere from 2 seconds up to 90 seconds where it will time out. And depending on what type of substances it is, will determine how long a scan takes. So again, I can't stress enough that this is a presumptive field test, but it again can help us identify a substance and to help us establish that probable cause. So you can see the progress bar on the bottom. It's still moving. The laser light indicator is still on. It's still trying to capture a spectrum. And again, a spectrum can be considered a chemical fingerprint. It's a series of wavelengths that are in colors that are unique to or wavelengths that are unique to the substance. So every substance within the TruNoc library has its own unique spectrum. And there's standards installed in the device. So the manufacturers, Thermo Fisher Scientific, they have standards to support everything that's in the library. So here it's captured a spectrum. It's trying to compare it to the known spectrum. And here you can see we identified cocaine hydrochloride. So again, I can't manipulate the device, either can identify it or not. But if we were in person, you'd be able to use it yourself, maybe next year. But that's basically all I have. Let me put my PowerPoint up here one more time so you can have my contact information. And should anybody have any questions, feel free to give me a call. There we go. So thank you. Thank you, everybody on the MCLE staff who invited me back this year. And again, I hope to see you again next year in person. Do I have any more questions by any chance?
All right. Well, thanks very much for your presentation. As usual, I thought it was great. I'm just waiting a second to look because right after Nancy left, we got a question last time. So if anybody has any questions for Detective Cohen, I would type them into the course question chat box on your CLE Builder site that you're watching the presentation on.
Detective Cohen, have you seen a change this past year and a half with the pandemic with regards to the, the sale and or overdose amounts?
Overdose has been consistent, unfortunately. It seemed like they do climb. And the overdoses tend to go up and down. Seems like, if you tracked all the data throughout the region, you would get an idea of maybe when new drugs are coming in. And it seems like when they're getting distributed out to the street dealer, at first the overdoses will increase and then they will become stable. Seems like the suppliers know to maybe add more cutting agents to the drugs that were received. But then you could see, in the next couple of weeks to a month, the overdoses increase again. So it's a constant up and down. In my experience, as far as the pandemic is concerned, I think the drug seizures have drastically increased. We're seeing a lot more out there. We're coming across larger seizures in all types of drugs, not just marijuana, but larger seizures of fentanyl, cocaine, methamphetamine. I don't have the answers for that or why that's the case, but it seems like within this last year, a lot of the seizures, we've been having a lot of trafficking seizures just on street dealers alone. We do conduct long-term investigations, which usually yield larger seizures, but street dealers, it seems like they're coming out with more. Why? I don't know.
And jumping back to the TruNarc device that you're showing a little bit ago and I've talked about, is there any type of known error rate on the testing device?
From what the company tells me, it's less than 1%, less than 5%. It has a detection rate of over in the high 90s, but I don't have any exact numbers. But I can tell you from experience that when we field test the drugs with the TruNarc and submit the drugs to the crime lab is confirming what we're seeing with the TruNarc. Now, with that being said, sometimes the crime lab will see additional drugs. So the TruNarc's not always going to see everything that's present. It's going to see, it depends on the concentration. So let's say, for instance, I have a bag that contains both heroin and fentanyl. TruNarc may alarm just for one. And then the lab comes back and say, yes, you have that one. The TruNarc identified fentanyl. Yes, there's fentanyl within the seizure you submitted. But there's also heroin here. So I haven't seen anything different than that. I haven't sent anything to the crime lab that has come back different than what the TruNarc has told us. The only difference would be there would be an additional substance there.
Okay. And so have you ever used the TruNarc and kind of moved it around a bag and gotten different results or something when you're dealing with a mixture like that?
We have, and part of the training is that you do scan different areas of that bag. But based on some, with heroin and fentanyl are a challenge with TruNarc unless you take that second step. If we're able to detect heroin and fentanyl with a direct scan like I just performed, that's telling me the purity levels are high. When it's street level samples, it's difficult to detect with the TruNarc. That's where the MX908 comes in play. But we can detect it. We just have to do that secondary test that would be using that SIRS technique, the surface enhanced Raman spectroscopy, where we use a little vial of ethanol, take a scoop of the substance, enter it into the ethanol, then put a stick that has this metal substrate on there. We put the stick in, we remove the stick, we let it air dry. And then what we do is we end up putting the stick right up here, and that helps magnify the spectrum. So essentially it makes the device become a trace detection device, but it can't do that with all the drugs within the library. So, but there has been times, to answer your question, Jason, where let's say I had a street, you know, an eight ball of cocaine that's really stepped on, as we would say, or a lot of cutting agents has been added to it. So I'd scan an area and I'd get that benzocaine reading, and scan a second area of benzocaine, and then a third area, cocaine hydrochloride. So you're basically analyzing that area with that, where the laser hits, not the whole bag itself. So we've been very successful with it. And like I said, the lab has confirmed our testing. We'll mention it in our police report that it is a presumptive field test. And then obviously at the time of trial, we'll have lab certs in hand and obviously an analyst there to testify.
All right. Well, again, I appreciate it. As usual, it's a great presentation. I don't see any other questions coming in. So thanks very much.
Hey, thank you. Everybody be well. See you soon. Stay healthy.